It is the Advent season. We've got Christmas carols. We've got beautiful trees. We've got stars in the sky flashing. But we've also got this edition of The Next Step. I am Father Voskin, a priest of the Armenian Church, connecting the dots during this Advent season. This is episode number 393, and we're inviting you to take the next step.
Hi, this is Susie from epostle.net, welcoming you, our worldwide community, to a new episode of The Next Step with Father Voskin. The next step is a step, a stride, moving us forward. Here, Father Voskin provides his unique and distinctive voice for Armenian Orthodoxy, as providing an intelligent and practical answer to the challenges of life, based on the solid principles of love, faith, and hope as expressed by Jesus Christ. And most importantly, you don't have to check your brain in at the door to follow Armedoxy. It's a practical approach to melding spirit and passion in the real world. So turn up the volume and get ready to take the next step.
Well, it is a freezing morning over here. I know I'm so dramatic. I've got my little half mittens on and I'm bundled up. It is so cold. I know anything below, what would you say over here in Southern California, anything below 50? 50 is like freezing. We're so dramatic over here. Last night we did Bible study and I mentioned that it's so cold in the church. And one of our members at Bible study, she's from Binghamton, New York. She goes, I'd hate to hear what you'd say if you were out there. You know, you should never be out on the East Coast. Yes, I know we're spoiled here in Southern California, but oh, it is brisk though. Okay, it is cold, it is freezing, but it is brisk, and it is a beautiful day. Whatever the case may be, wherever you're listening, I'm glad you're tuned in, and we've got a few minutes to be together to share some thoughts. I'm going to be talking a little bit about the Christmas season and getting ready for the big Christmas celebration. Talk about some things. Actually, and I got a great song for you, too, a discovery, a band that we featured many times here on The Next Step, but we didn't realize they had a Christmas album, too. Yeah, that's coming up in a little bit. Isn't that the case? Like all bands do Christmas albums somewhere along the way. Anyway, by the way, before I go any further, next couple weeks, I just realized as I was putting together today's show that the next 2 weeks are unique Thursdays. You know, we always podcast on Thursdays. So next week is Christmas Eve, and the following week is New Year's Eve. So I thought we'd have some great little shows, a little bit different from the usual fare. And what I'm thinking about next week is doing like some Christmas carol reflections. Now, what does that mean? Christmas carol reflections? Well, think about it. You know, like so much of the images that we have about Christmas are not necessarily images that come to us from any historical basis. I mean, I know that's a loaded assumption too, right? Because who's to say what the Bible is, the historical accuracy of the Bible? But basically, you know, like last night we were reading the Gospel of Luke, and it says, "And Jesus was born in a manger because there was no room for him at the inn." You know, that's all it says. That's all it says. This is Luke chapter 2. There was no room for him at the inn. But we have these incredible stories and images that come out of our head, not on their own, of course, because through the years, through oral tradition, later through written tradition with stories, and lately because of Hollywood in the last 100 years, you have this incredible imagery of that inn incident, okay? For lack of a better word, what happened at the end, you know, and you could go through it in your mind, you know, Joseph coming up and the wife is ready, Mary is ready to have the baby, Jesus. She's in labor pain. It's terrible. And they're coming on the donkey and Joseph is struggling because it's winter and, you know, there's like flurries and the rain is hitting him and he finally gets to an inn, you know, what we would what we would today call the hotel-motel event, right? He gets to the inn and he knocks on the door. And inside there are people. It's like a pub and they are just like drinking, smashing the glasses at one another. Ha 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 ha. Meanwhile, the Son of God is going to be born, you know? And people are just, yeah, let's go, let's do this, let's do that, we're going to have a great time, and, you know, what channel is the football game on, let's turn it on. Certainly 2,000 years ago, you kind of adapted for the times, right? And the innkeeper says, move on, we don't have any room. And Joseph says, please, my wife is with child, she's ready to deliver, don't you have some place? And the innkeeper says, oh, come on. And then, you know, he points up to the upstairs room, and you still see these ill-clad, dressed women coming out from the men, jumping around and everything, and he says, no, I don't have any room. And Joseph says, please, I'll take anything you want, anything you have, even just a small little area, even someplace reserved for the animals. And the innkeeper says, okay, we have a barn, we have a stable in the back, go over there. And of course, Joseph takes Mary there, and places Jesus Christ is born, you know, in the barn. Now, these images come to us not only from movies, but they also come to us from carols. Sometimes some very beautiful carols too, right? Away in a manger, no crib for a bed, the little Lord Jesus. And a lot of imagery that we have about Christmas comes because of our goodwill. Because we want to believe in these kind of things. We want to believe. And there's nothing wrong with that. I think it's beautiful. I think it's beautiful that we add on. We bring our interpretation to the entire story. What it means to us for Jesus to be without a bed, for him to be away in a manger. I shared with you the story of this little boy that we saw a few weeks ago in the shelter when we were feeding the homeless over there. And the mother came up, and she was basically holding this little in her arms. And we thought it looked kind of different, not a usual package. She had blankets on and everything, and certainly it was very different. It was a small little baby, 5-day old. And I shared with you that story that to me this was basically Jesus being born, right? Jesus was homeless. Jesus, there was no room for him at the inn. Right? So he was basically in a shelter called a stable. He was born in a manger. And when we went up to that woman, she told us that the name of the child was King. And I thought, wow, the audacity of this woman to name her child King. The audacity, of course, in a good sense, because she had that confidence. And I thought, it made me reflect about Mother Mary. How she must have been sitting at the stable, and what the thoughts might have been going through her head. No room, and here's an angel has told her, you're going to have this child, and it's going to be the savior of the world, and here it is, time for her to have the baby, and you're looking around, and there's no place, and you end up as a homeless person, and you're out there in that stable with the barn animals, the first witnesses to Jesus's birth. The animals, yeah, that's right. And so these stories developed. And, you know, I shared with you that story, and certainly last night at our Bible study, one of our ladies said, I went to the shelter and I met King. Whoa. And she actually said she held King. And I wish you could have, I can't describe her look, because she sincerely believed, and she said, I felt like I was holding the Lord Jesus. And you should have seen her smile. You should have seen what she was radiating with her look. So basically, the story had evolved. Not only evolved, but we had now placed people into these categories. And that's what all of this Christian story is about, the Christmas story is about. It's about each of us contributing to it. Because if you really think about it, I want you to really seriously think about who was around to record these stories. I mean, every single day since the beginning of all eternity, things have been born, right? whether it's a couple cells, whether it's some kind of animal, plant life, you know, things have reproduced. And certainly during the last several thousand years where human life has been around on this earth, people have been born. And so it wasn't unusual. It wasn't unusual that a woman was traveling and it was her time to give birth, and there wasn't any place for her to go. So who recorded these stories? And none of this was really out of the ordinary. None of it, okay? Until it was resurrected some 33 years later. Right? Because obviously you don't write about people's births unless something incredible happened. So here in the United States, we know the birth of George Washington, for instance. We know Abraham Lincoln, the log cabin. About several famous people that are important to our history. So and it's not because they were born, but because of the things that they did. So George Washington became the first president of the United States. What did that do to us? It made us want to know a little bit of his background. We wanted to find out. Hey, the most scandalous one was the recent president, President Barack Obama, right? He aspired to become president. There was question. And then when he became president, they put him on the line and they said, hey, wait a minute, you're not born in America. Certainly I am. I'm born in Hawaii. Well, when was Hawaii brought into the Union? 1959. And you were born in 1961 or 60. You know, well, hey, you know what? If you're born that day that the state is in the Union, you're in the law, right? There's a cutoff point. It made it. But here's what I'm getting at. Is that wasn't a concern until he did something famous like become the president of the United States. And so too with Jesus. His birth was wasn't questioned. It was not a big deal until he did something out of the ordinary. And in this case, it was completely out of the ordinary, something supernatural, something that had never been done before. Basically die, and not only die, but die a tremendously tragic, horrific death up on a cross, something that it would be impossible to come back from, bones broken, blood and guts spilling out. And he comes back to life. And he comes back whole and complete, and he promises that life to everyone. And the witnesses who witness this become changed individuals, having opportunities to really say, yeah, maybe this is not true, okay? Maybe it's a dream. No, it's so true that they go to their death defending what they saw and what they witnessed. And because of that, the tradition started. People wanted to know, well, tell us a little bit about Jesus' life. And so it's basically a backwards chronology. That's how the Gospels developed. They developed because there was the post-resurrection community that was looking at all of these events. Then there was people who were saying, well, what do you mean he's alive now? What happened? And then they talked about the resurrection. Well, resurrection from what? From the crucifixion. Well, if he was crucified, what happened before? Why was he crucified? Because of sedition. Here was his trial. Well, what did he do? Where is the proof for that sedition? What happened? Well, here's the documents on the 3 years that he spent preaching since his baptism. Well, okay, if he did all these beautiful works, where did he come from? He came from a place in Galilee, from Nazareth. Well, what was his childhood like? Well, there was a man who was married to his mother who was a carpenter, and it was probably likely that he worked in the carpentry shop. And what are the incidents that happened at his birth? And so basically, it's a backwards chronology. You're starting off from the most incredible event, and forgive me, lack of basically what put him on the map, what made him famous, is the resurrection. Okay? Something totally unique. And it's true of anybody who's of any stature. I mean, look at President Barack Obama. He had gone through all of the steps. He was a senator. He was an organizer. But when he became president, that's when the questioning started. Well, give us your background. And same way. Same way with Jesus, people wanted to know who he was, where he was from. And so the gospel narratives were formed to answer these questions. And this was about good 20 years after the resurrection, when the first Gospels were first being written, namely Mark, which incidentally doesn't have the birth narrative, the nativity narrative in Mark. It was Matthew who added on to Mark, and you've got the stories of the visit of the Magi. You've got Luke who writes about the shepherds, and both will attest to the virgin birth. They talk about a way in the manger and so on. So basically, you've got these stories that come to you a good two, three, maybe even four decades after Jesus' resurrection, at least a half a century after his birth, at least. Okay, so these stories are coming around, and it's up to us to interact with them and to really read the way we want to. And that's why last couple nights I've been doing some Bible studies here in the Glendale area, talking about how to read these narratives rather than to just pick them apart and saying, oh, look at this or anything, look at this detail, rather than looking at details, really understanding how this makes sense for us today, rather than a bit of history, understanding the Christ child who is being born today, understanding the Mary who is looking for that home. And in this research that I've been doing the last few days in preparing for the Bible studies, today's podcast, and in preparation for the upcoming feast, I ran across Martin Luther King's Christmas Eve sermon, delivered in 1967. I had never heard this. I found it. I will definitely put a link on today's show notes. You can listen to it. You could read it either way. There was absolutely nothing new in it. It was basically, if you hear it, you'll know what I mean. Basically, he's taking the themes that he's had throughout his ministry, throughout the civil rights movement, and he's basically put them in a collection. And that's where I think this is the value. You want to hear Martin Luther King, a bit he was all about. It comes together in this 1967 Christmas Eve service. So this would be, let's see, he was assassinated in April of 68. So this is about 4 months before his death. Talking about some incredible things. A world at war. A world where there is poverty. A world where there is difficulty. And the basic question comes up, which we've been talking about here on The Next Step, you know? Like, what right do we have at this point? What is the celebration all about? How can we celebrate with all of these things going on? So I came across this little message, and I want to share that with you too. So do check out the show notes. I think you'll find it very interesting. And to me, it's just incredible. Anything that I find from Martin Luther King Jr., it's not only resonates with me because I grew up during that time, and I do remember the talk about it. Actually, I should say I grew up after his assassination. I was 12 years old when he was assassinated, so really my consciousness and that whole idea of the protest movements and all that formed, I would say, in the teen years. And certainly he was very much talked about, but remember, after him there was the Malcolm X, there was the Jesus movement, there was a whole bunch of things going on in America. That's not what the point of today's show is. I've talked about that stuff enough, right? No, don't say that ad nauseum. I hope not ad nauseum. We've been talking about that. But basically, you hear him, and he talks about a message that needs to be talked about today. And that's when you realize it needs to be talked about every day. It needs to be talked about every year. Somehow we've lost sight of this. And I'm really happy that at least through our Advent, through the many programs that we put together in his shoes, we're being faithful to the basic message of Christmas. Let's see, how are we doing on time? Why don't we take a break right now? I'll come back and I'll tell you about our Advent season and share some more with you. We're going to be listening to, yes, element. You read ahead of me, didn't you? You looked at the show notes. Well, you know, Element, Aradabanjian, just one of, I'm a big fan of him, and we play a lot of Element here on The Next Step. So my son told me the other day, Dad, did you know that they have a Christmas album? No, I didn't know. So quickly went and looked it up. Yeah, it's called The Christmas Spirit or The Spirit of Christmas. Whatever the case, it is just beautiful music. It has all of the things, all of the elements that you're accustomed to from an element song. You've got Ara playing his accordion, signature accordion. You got some beautiful melody lines and some great voices, all of it coming together. Anyway, talked enough about it. Let's listen to one. Here you go. Aradabanjian and the Element Band doing The Spirit of Christmas. Ah, beautiful. That's one of my favorites on the album. All of them. Actually, this is one of those Christmas albums you like to just put on and you kind of enjoy all of the songs. There's a lot of good stuff on there, including some translated stuff, including some original stuff too, dedicated to no one else but Santa Claus. Yeah, it is good. Anyway, I will have a link on today's show notes. Do check it out. Support these bands that we play here on The Next Step. This is available on iTunes as well as, I believe, CD Baby. Anyway, there will be a link on today's show notes. Hope you enjoyed it. Christmas carols, aren't they beautiful? I just love Christmas carols. And I think next week, if all goes well, I think that's what I want to do next week on the 24th. It'll be Christmas Eve, and we'll dedicate it to Christmas carols. Not just to play Christmas. No, I'm not going to get off the hook by just playing a line of Christmas carols, but rather talk about the experiences of Christmas carols, how they shape our understanding, what do they translate to us. It'll be an interesting little show, and I hope you'll tune in and you'll enjoy it. I know you will. I know I'll enjoy it, okay? Because it's my two favorite things, being with you on The Next Step and playing music. So it's a win-win, right? Win-win for me. I hope it is for you too. Anyway, that will be next week. And as I shared with you, a lot of our imagery for Christmas, of course, comes from movies. It comes from songs. It comes from just the general atmosphere all around us. So what we try to do is really kind of remove some of the baggage that goes with Christmas, kind of get to the deep roots. And that's what Advent is about. Advent is really the period before Christmas in preparation. If you think about it, just look at the evolution of thought that came with Christmas that I shared with you just a few minutes ago, right? I mean, the whole Christmas story, where does it start from? It starts not at Bethlehem in the manger. It actually starts at post-resurrection time in Jerusalem, the apostles seeing Jesus after the death, after the crucifixion, and asking the questions. And so develops the story. So is built the story, okay, built on the block of resurrection. On that resurrection, people are asking the questions, well, how did he get to this point? And you go backwards, a backward chronology. Talk about the crucifixion. Why was he crucified? Well, these are the things that he did. What did he teach? And when did he start teaching? He started teaching at his baptism. What happened before his baptism? And you go backwards until you get to the Bethlehem event. And so these things get recorded, and they become part of the bigger tradition of what is called Christianity. Okay, so now you have all of this. And in the same way, if you were to go forward, people started celebrating these events. Now, next week, just in a few days, actually the 21st and 22nd, happens to be the winter solstice. Now, you know I am a big fan of all these astronomical events that take place and kind of shape our universe and who we are. And a big one that shapes us who we are is the solstice. Basically, our Earth is on an axis. We're not straight. No, we are on an axis. And the way the Earth turns and rotates around the sun dictates how we live. Whether you're going to wear a sweater today, you're going to wear your paws on, or you're going to take your paw mittens off, right? It has to do with weather. It has to do where we are in relation to the equator, in relation to the poles. And so a lot of our life, you don't realize how much of your life is dependent on this rotation around the sun. Well, a big event takes place next week. It's called the winter solstice.
Praise be to the distance of the sun. Geoffel
as a silver planet. Thank you again for indulging me. Okay, so the winter solstice is coming up. And what that is the days here in the Northern Hemisphere, the days start getting longer. In other words, it is the point, winter signals that the days have gotten shorter to such point that winter begins, and winter, now the days are very short, but they start getting longer. And I guess that's just the opposite of what you experience down in the Southern Hemisphere, right? The solstice next week, I don't know, do you call it winter? Do you call it summer solstice? Anyway, the days start getting shorter. For us, the days start getting longer. And, of course, where Christianity evolved from, basically in the Middle East, being in the Northern Hemisphere, there were groups of people who would celebrate the birth of the sun. S-U-N, sun, right? Because the days started getting longer, the birth of the sun. And so there was an accepted tradition of all kinds of worshipers of the sun. and there were feasts dedicated to the sun in the Roman Empire. When Constantine became a Christian, he decided to do away with some of these pagan rituals. One of the ways that he found was to replace them with Christian celebrations. Now, up until that point, the birth, actually the visit of the Magi and the baptism of Christ, all three of these events, because really, if you think about it, what are these three events? They're Christmas, which means literally, which we Armenians have still preserved the name of that feast. It's called Astvazahaydnutyun, or Theophany. Theo being God, Epiphany being the revelation, Theophany, the revelation of God. And these three events, whether it's Nativity, the visit of the Magi, or the baptism, all of them signal the revelation, God being revealed. And certainly at his baptism, it's the revelation of the Holy Trinity when the Father says, "This is my Son." The Holy Spirit descends in the form of a dove, and or in a dove-like form, and Jesus Christ, the Son of God, is there. So at that point in history, you've got the Trinity revealing itself right at that single point. Well, what they found at that time, they said that, okay, there is this feast going on at the winter solstice, and we have Christmas, which is being celebrated on January 6th. And they found that pilgrims who wanted to go and say a prayer at Jesus' birthplace would also want to be present at his baptismal place. Or from Bethlehem to the River Jordan, there was basically a 12-day pilgrimage. And so they said, we can separate this, and they separated it to December 25th. And 12 days after December 25th, you'd get to the baptism. So pilgrims could go to Bethlehem on December 25th, celebrate the birth of Jesus, the nativity, and then walk over to January 6th, to the place where he was baptized. And so it was very convenient. By the way, that is the 12 days of Christmas. I know sometimes, especially marketers will tell you that the 12 days of Christmas, you're in it right now, you got to buy stuff. No, the 12 days of Christmas begin with December 25th, not end with December 25th. They end with January 6th. You know, and you know what? I do need to say this because people say, oh, well, what about the Russians? They're a day off from us. They're on January 7th. And what's the deal with Jerusalem? Jerusalem, they celebrate Christmas on January 19th. What? Well, that's just a question of the Julian calendar as opposed to the Gregorian calendar. Basically, January 7th is 13 days off of December 25th. So the Russians who celebrate January 7th are really celebrating December 25th. They've separated it too, as well. In Jerusalem, they're celebrating, the Armenians are celebrating January 6th, but because they're off with the calendar by 13 days, they celebrate it on the 19th. That's the difference. But the Armenian Orthodox are the only people who have preserved and kept January 6th as the original date, the date of Nativity, visit of the Magi, as well as the baptism of Jesus Christ. Now, all this is, of course, fun stuff to talk about. But how does it add to our faith? Well, it adds to our faith by us reacting to it. And you start looking at it just in the same way that I've been talking about right now. You look at it and you say, well, what does this really mean to me? Well, what it means is that, hey, does it really matter? You've got a few dates there. Does the date really matter? Or what is important is the event that's taking place. Jesus Christ being born. Jesus Christ being born in a world where seemingly there might not be room. Do I have room for him in my heart, in my world, in my life? Okay, these are the questions. And this is how you approach the Christmas feast. Can you make Jesus Christ be born in your life every single day? That's a big thing, right? Okay, I've given you four dates, January 6th, 7th, 19th, December 25th, okay. These are one way or another, you know somebody in the world's going to be celebrating Christmas on those days. Now, how about you? Can you do it on those 4 days? Can you do it on a fifth day out of the year? Can you do it on a sixth, seventh? Can you do it on a 365-day basis? And here's the real big one. Can you do it on a 366 next year? Because you're getting a February 29th. Look at that. Basically, the Christian has to express that Christmas every single day of his life. And that's really the challenge for all of us. That's where we come up with this challenge of walking in the shoes of others, of being the Christian that we really should be. And so what we do through the walking in his shoes, we have these various Advent programs where we try to strip away, because as I said a few minutes ago, we look backwards. We do a reverse chronology in the evolution of the story. But if you take a forward chronology, what happens after Christmas was celebrated? Well, we got into the tradition of the trees. And under the trees, we started putting toys. Where do those toys come from? We got into a tradition of a good man named Saint Nicholas, who would bring stuff and place it and give it to children, needy children. And the tradition evolved to a Saint Nicholas Santa Claus, who would bring things. And how did Santa Claus bring those things? Well, he needed a means of transportation. No one sees him during the year, so where must he be? He must obviously be in the North Pole, someplace that nobody knows about, right? And how does he get down from the North Pole? Well, he has a reindeer sleigh. And what about foggy nights? Well, then he has a Rudolph with a red nose. I'm serious. This is how we have evolved. These are how the stories evolve through the years. It's not like somebody just sat down and said, hey, let's make this whole structure of this mythology. No, people have talked about it, and there have been ways of explaining different things. And so Rudolph has had that red nose. Charlie Brown's come around, and he's, you know, bought the tree that nobody wants. And there are a vast number of these stories that go around. Now, in Advent season, what you need to do is start ripping them apart, taking them all down, and you find out that at the bottom of it, it's about Jesus Christ being born. Basically, that one-liner, Jesus is the reason of the season, that's it. That's it. If you have a Christmas without Jesus, it's really not Christmas. So who's the Christmas party for? It's for Jesus. And you look at it and you say, okay, now I want you to really think about this, okay? It's his birthday party. That's what Christmas is, right? What do you do at birthday parties? Not only celebrate, you give gifts, right? Now, you got to get a gift for the person, something that he will like. And I've used this example many times. You know, it's like something that you don't like. Who would give him something like that, right? Okay, like suppose you don't enjoy the opera. I'll use my case, okay, in point, okay? I do enjoy some opera, but, you know, it wouldn't be the kind of gift you'd want to get me. Okay. I think if you got me tickets to something else that I might enjoy, a day on the pond, a day out by the beach or something like that, you know, a hotel room by the beach, okay, there you go. That one I can't argue with. That one I would take, okay? If that's the gift that I would want or I would enjoy, and you know that I wouldn't enjoy opera tickets, why would you get me opera tickets? Same way, you want to find out what Jesus wants for his birthday. And he says it. He says it in no uncertain terms. If you want to honor me, take care of one another. He says there's a big party going on. And he said the owner of the party, the one who was giving the party, went out and he said, bring everybody in. And one by one, people gave excuses. Everybody had an excuse why not to attend the party. And so he said, okay, then just open up the party to everybody and see who comes in. And the guy did. And there was still room. Jesus said, that's what the party is all about. That's what the kingdom of God is all about. People who have been invited don't want to come, let them not come. Do you want to come? If you want to come, you're invited to that party. And he says, the way you're invited to that is, he says, do something good for other people. He says, give to other people who have absolutely no way of repaying you back. Why? Well, think about it. God has given you life. You have absolutely no way of repaying him back except to do the good that you know you have to do. And so God says, okay, I've given you this gift. In return, I want you to do to others. to pay it back and to pay it forward to others. Give to others. Give them what is necessary. And so he instructs us to feed the hungry, to clothe the naked, to house the homeless, to visit the sick and those weary in prison. Okay, he gives you a bunch of things that you can do. Okay, now, Advent, as we prepare for Christmas, is that season where you have to have a more heightened awareness of your duty and obligation as a Christian. And so we have all kinds of programs. We have toy drives, and not just toys that we're going to go and distribute to kids. We find the kids that have absolutely no way of giving back to us. Who are they? The ones in the shelters. The kids who are there because of domestic violence. This is a program we started here in Glendale. We called it the Yvette Hagopian Toy Drive. Why? Yvette was a young lady who was murdered because of domestic violence. She was murdered. Her parents are very, very close to me. We got close after her death, and they've lent her name to this program. And we collect toys. I'd say in the last several years, we've collected over 10,000. But what's even more exciting is that people are picking up on it and saying, I want to do a drive too. I want to do an extra drive here and there too. Another one is Katya Hamparian Memorial Service. We just had it last Sunday. I got to tell you, it's one of those services that you don't want to do, but you're really glad that you do it. We had a young mother who just came. This is for parents who have lost children. Probably the ultimate tragedy. Not probably, it is the ultimate tragedy. Because it's so unnatural, right? The natural order of things is children bury their parents. This one is parents burying their children. And so we got together for a candlelight service. And there, I have to tell you this. In fact, I'm going to share this with you. We had families that came, and we do it again. I want to thank the Hamparian family because they lend their child's name. She was a young girl, 13 years of age, who was killed in an accident, and they lend their daughter's name to this. And what it does is it invites people to also share, to realize that they are not alone, that there are so many people that go through the grief, the bereavement of a child. And not only that, when you look on the broader scale, there's people that don't have these opportunities for support, namely the people of war, namely what's the people of Syria, the people of Darfur, of the Congo, people who have to deal with childhood loss on a daily basis. And you look around the world and you realize that, you know, there is so much tragedy. And you find that your only means of keeping sane amidst that tragedy is by realizing that God is working through each and every one of us. Now I'm going to end today by sharing some thoughts about this memorial service, because it kind of gets us to the point of where we're at during this Advent season. The memorial service was just beautiful, as it always is. Very had a mother who came, who had just recently lost her child to an accident, and the support that she received was just so beautiful. I mean, I can't tell you how beautiful it was, because as a pastor, I don't think I could express that as a pastor, what I did see, because it wasn't just me reaching out. It was people coming together, and it signaled a maturity in the community. And that's important, because it can't be one person Christianity. We all have to get involved in there. Anyway, one of the young men who passed away 10 years ago, I shared this in the past. His name is Vahakan. I've done his walk. His parents have set up a walk to bring about goodness among young people. His mother just wrote a book called Does God Have a Bicycle? What We Can Learn from Children. Her name is Ida Nalbandian. She spells it as Ida, I-D-A. She wrote this beautiful book. It's available on Amazon. I will put a link on today's show notes. I'm going to try to see if I could get her to come and talk about it, maybe be a guest on the next step. But what she's done is just, it's just basically reflections from her child and what she has learned from the innocence of that child. Go to the Amazon site. You could read the first chapter. I think it's available for free. And you could see if you like it. I would strongly suggest this is a beautiful, beautiful book, especially the pictures, too. It's a little kid. But here's the story. I'm reading this, and we're sitting at the at the conclusion of the service. I read a portion from this book and just how much we can learn from children. And there was, after that, we did a candle lighting. We were all sitting around the church. It was raining that day, so we sat around the church in candles. And people started talking about their losses, about the children that they lost, and different stories. And on the top of our altar at church is the passage from the Gospel of Matthew. It says, "And Jesus said, 'Let the little children come to me and do not stop them, for to such belongs the kingdom of heaven.'" And one of the guys that was with us, actually a church guy, he's out of the area, attends another church, but I know he's a regular. He says, "Every time I come to this church, I look up at those words, and it occurs to me, God must have a reason." I thought that was unusual, and I read it, and then I realized, yeah, let the children come to me. Yes, there is another way of reading that you might think that Jesus is saying, let the children come to me, let them die and come to me. And that's horrible, isn't it? It's horrible. And so fortunately, we've written the entire thing out there, and fortunately for us, that this man hadn't read the entire thing or didn't understand it. Fortunately, because I think in the understanding of the entire thing, you understand what Christ is saying. Let the children come to me, for to such belongs the kingdom of heaven. You read it in context, you understand that the people were forbidding the children to come. Like, they are not as educated. They are not as refined. They are not spiritually awake to understand what you're saying, Jesus, and says, stop it. To them belongs the kingdom of heaven. And when you read this book, Does God Have a Bicycle? And you hear statements like that, Jesus saying this, you realize that, you know, unfortunately, we've lost a lot of our innocence. I remember when my son, Bahadurjan, we were playing baseball as he was growing up one day. And we were there, my wife and I, and we're throwing the ball. And I think my wife said, keep your, I was throwing the ball to him. Or I can't remember exactly how this was going. But I remember my wife saying, Bahadurjan, keep your eye on the ball. And think about that, right? You're getting a ball thrown at you with the bat, and you're 3 years old, 4 years old. Keep your eye on the ball. What do? He went, and he knelt down, and he put his eye on the ball. He put the ball up to his eye. I mean, keep your eye on the ball. It just means look at it. I mean, there's an innocence in childhood, right? There's an innocence in children. And that innocence is what we have lost. And that's what needs to be recaptured if we're going to be talking about Christmas. If we're going to be talking about the true meaning of Christmas. If we're going to be talking about peace on earth, goodwill toward men. That's it. It's not that complicated. We have complicated, and the Advent season gives us a time to strip open everything and get down to the essential of what it's about. Jesus is the reason of the season. I'm going to end it for today this much. Next week, I promised you, I'm going to come back with some fun stuff and get us in the Christmas mood. Here's Susie to tell you how you can have a fun Christmas by getting involved with us.
This is Susie for In His Shoes Ministries. Before continuing with today's broadcast, I wanted to take this opportunity to remind you that this podcast is made possible through your prayers and generous donations. The message of Armenian Orthodoxy, or as Father Vazgen calls it, Armadoxy, is giving people an intelligent and practical answer to many of life's difficulties. At epostle.net, we are determined to bring apostolic evangelism to an electronic world, This means we must avail ourselves to technology's latest tools. Your donations help us expand and deliver this message to a waiting world. Please support us by pressing on the donate button at epostle.net. Thanks for listening and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazquez.
Well, thank you, Susie, and thanks to all of you for your kind support, your prayers. They go a long way. This is the Christmas season. We're getting ready for Christmas. It's a time for gift giving, and we would definitely appreciate a gift to this ministry, to Epostle, to In Issues. It goes a long way to furthering our mission and the work that we do. If you find a value in what we're doing and do you want to make a donation, it's really easy. As Susie said, go to the website, press on the button, inissues.org, epostle.net. All goes to the same place, by the way. Or just drop us a line. Send us your donation. You can send it to St. Peter Armenian Church, Youth Ministry Center, 632 West Stalker, Glendale, California, 91202. Yes, it is in the center of the universe. And you come down if you're ever in the Los Angeles area, especially during these holiday seasons. Please do stop by. We'd love to see you. I'm not going to go into any more elaboration than that. You know what our needs are, and it is a beautiful time of year. I hope it's beautiful wherever you're at. I hope your Christmas tree is shining. I hope you're shining. I hope your children are enjoying this time. It is not a time of guilt. It is a time to really reflect on all of the beauty that you have in your life. And yeah, there are people who don't have it. Maybe share some of that beauty that you have with others. Share the goodness. Share that happiness. Whether it's through our toy drive or through one of the drives that you have in your area, give to people. Give to others. Most of all, give the love that's in your heart. Next week, as I promised, we're going to have a very special one. I'm going to do, if all goes well, we're going to have a very special dedication to some of the stories that we learn at Christmas via the media. It'll be a little bit different. If you do get a chance, do get out there and watch some of the best movies that are out there for Christmas. Okay, my favorites, okay? One of them is Jimmy Stewart, It's a Wonderful Life. You got to watch that at Christmas time. The other one is Christmas Carol, and this is with Reginald Owens. Don't watch any of the others. I know, everybody tells you the other ones are really good and everything. The Reginald Owens, 1935, that's the one that I recommend. I love it. Don't ask me why. That's the one that I really like. And do see the 1935 Les Miserables. Okay, not nothing new. Watch the one with Frederick March. Okay, these are my Christmas picks for the holidays. You want to watch some movies to really get you into the spirit, these are the ones to watch. Okay, that about does everything that we're going to be doing over here. We'll have a lot more to talk about next week. And I hope you'll join us. In the meantime, do connect with us on Facebook. Do connect with us at the mothership, inissues.org. Hey, by the way, we just launched the 100yearjourney.org. It's now virtual. Do not miss that. The 100-year journey, which had been only accessible if you happen to be in the Southern California area. Now you can go to the website and it is all up there. And not only the artwork, but some of the background information, do some of the reading. It is really fascinating. 100-year journey. Everything I talked about today, everything we discussed, all of it will be in the show notes along with links. You won't want to miss it. So do check that out as well. Hey, for the team who put today's show together, for Susie, our producer, for Ken, our engineer, this is Father Vazquez inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskullness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of epostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
Jesus is the reason of the season.